Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga Podcast. I'm Manuel Feit, he's Stefan Bienkowski. Stefan, how's it going?
Yeah, very, very well. Lovely, toasty and comfortable at home, which I only mention because you are on the road. I feel like right now at least one of us is not at home every week when we do this show, whether it's Leipzig or, you know, anywhere really. And this week you seem to be somewhere else entirely.
Yeah, I'm in Los Angeles. I was here for the MLS Cup final, covering that for Transfermarkt. An astonishing game with some Bundesliga connections. Steve Gerundolo, those who follow Hannover 96, of course, will remember him. He's an all-time legend at the club. I think he played the most games of any player for them, right? I think that's the only professional team he's played for. He's the head coach of LAFC, and he ended up winning the title thanks to a late, late goal by Gareth Bale and then a penalty shootout. Philadelphia Union, of course, also some Bundesliga connections, old and new, right? Ernst Tanner, the former sporting director of Hoffenheim, is in charge of Philadelphia Union. But also Paxton Aaronson broke that story earlier this week, or actually on my way to LA, that he is going to join Eintracht Frankfurt medical this week, Stefan. So watched a little bit of him as well. Got some quotes. So that's going to be the newsletter later this week from me. But other than that, yeah, it was a great game. Enjoyed it. My Bundesliga links, I guess.
Yeah, you did get to enjoy some interesting celebrity watching after the game, didn't you?
Yeah, Will Ferrell was there in the dressing room. One of the oddities of US sport is that you're allowed into the dressing rooms here, which is kind of surreal. And Will Ferrell is one of the owners, right? Colin Hanks too, Tom Hanks' son, also there. I was also partying it up with the players. I was not allowed to the after party. That would have been interesting. But yeah, it's good times.
Do you want to hear an interesting bit of information about Colin Hanks? Which has nothing to do with football. If I'm not mistaken, it might not be him, it might be another one of the Hanks brothers, but I think Colin Hanks did the voice for all the Woody doll toys. So do you remember like in the 90s when they came out and you'd pull a string and it'd say something like, oh, I've got a snake in my boots. Apparently that wasn't Tom Hanks. That was one of his brothers. I think it was Colin. So there you go.
I think Colin is his son. I don't know.
Oh, is that his son? Oh, right. Well, it was his brother then. Sorry. Okay, it was his brother who did the voice, I think. So I guess that wasn't him.
Interesting.
Oh, well. Just a totally random bit of Hollywood trivia there that has no relation whatsoever to what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, Justin Bieber was at the game. You know, Canada's worst ever export.
Right, we should really move on to the German football at some point here. People are just going to probably wonder why they've tuned into this episode of TMZ.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's start it. Like, let's get into that. I guess right after this.
This episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Basketball is back, and Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You always find the latest odds, team matchup info, players news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to BetOnline.ag. to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. That is betonline.ag. Make sure to use our promo code BELIEVE to receive your rewards. That's BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V. BetOnline, where the game starts.
So, Stefan, what should we start with here? Do you want to start with the Champions League, or do you want to start with Bayer Leverkusen finally waking up to the 2022-2023 season?
Yeah, let's do the Bundesliga first, and then we can finish up with the Champions League. Keep people waiting for the end, for the juicy bits. But actually, this is probably the juiciest part of the show, just because it was just the craziest match of game of football. I think in both of our, I think we both predicted Union to win this game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah,
wrong.
Wasn't the first time, won't be the last. It was a really interesting game. I actually was a bit, well, I mean, the first half bored me to tears, to be perfectly honest with you, and I was so close to just turning the thing off in general, to be honest with you, and just doing something else more productive with my Sunday afternoon. But it was a really interesting game in a sense that I think it really illustrated just how fragile this Leverkusen side is, with, like, in terms of confidence and in terms of, you know, that kind of mental aspect, because obviously people will look at that scoreline and be like, okay, well, you know, Leverkusen turned it on, they flipped the switch, and suddenly everything was amazing and they just blew Union away. But in truth, it was a game in which Union kind of controlled most of the first half without really threatening, to be fair to them. And then Leverkusen got a very fortunate goal, I thought, just as the second half started. Unfortunate in the sense that it was an unmarked player in the box for the corner, which I think is the third week in a row Union have conceded a goal from a corner, which isn't quite like them. So maybe that's a sign of maybe some wear and tear on that side. But after that happened, Union just completely capitulated, and Leverkusen just kind of suddenly just felt like they had, you could see like the confidence oozing from them. They hit Union straight away with two incredible counterattacks. And all of a sudden you got guys like Mitchell Backer just kind of skinning players, playing incredible through balls. And all of a sudden you could do no wrong. So, but that all came from this one goal, which just kind of turned the game on its head. And I mean, that's why we all love football, because it has that ability to just completely flip a game upside down, and the team they're top of the table just suddenly capitulate, and the team they're bottom of the table just become gladiators. So, you know, there's that. But so I'm obviously, you know, Leverkusen showed what they're capable of, but I'd be reserved to suggest that, or I'd be reluctant to suggest that this was a obvious example of, you know, Xabi Alonso fixing what was broken in that team, because to me, they still look like the same fragile Leverkusen side.
Yeah, and they benefited from some individual errors too, right? I think what's really interesting about games like this, and I think we've had a lot of them in the COVID era, way more than I think previously, is that when things go sideways, even among top teams, the results become lopsided really quickly. I mean, we look at what Bayern did to Barcelona on several occasions, right? But there's some other results, like the Gladbach win over Bayern last year in the Pokal comes to mind, the 5-0 victory, right? And or Union's win over Schalke earlier this season. It seems like, and there's probably countless other examples too, when these teams that are very, very much built on being tactical, astute, and disciplined, when you take that away from them, I guess the margins are so thin that all of a sudden the beatings seem to be way more frequent than they used to be. And I think there is something to it, that a lot of it comes to the tight schedule that we have been experiencing, right? You see it a lot. This is a phenomenon. I know we're not a North American football podcast, but it's a phenomenon that you see in North American sports quite a bit, where the schedule is really heavy, right? For whether it's basketball teams or hockey teams, sometimes blowout victories happen, even though the lines, the balance is so much closer, far more frequently. And I think it's because teams realize the schedule is tight, they realize the game is lost. And I think because of that, you're getting way heavier defeats and victories than you did if we had an enormous schedule.
Yeah, it's just going to be really interesting to see how Union respond to this, because they have this reputation for being these mentality monsters. I think it's the word that's been used to describe them, and they have been. I mean, even up until what, last week against Gladbach, when a similar situation happened where they conceded a goal first from a corner. But they were able to kind of really compress the match and eventually, turn it around in their favour. And it was actually Gladbach that capitulated in that match. So, you know, they are, up until even last week, they were still showing that they had that fire and hunger. But, I think, as you said, you know, the first goal was poor defending. I can't remember if it was the second or third goal, which was a goalkeeping mistake, which is obviously another kind of freak goal. So, maybe Urs Fischer will sit down and say, look, guys, that was a one-off. We're not going to lose games like that every weekend. And, you know, we just kind of get on with it. And they've got Augsburg next, which is a perfectly winnable game for them. So, you know, maybe they can bounce back. But if they don't, we might end up seeing this team kind of cling on until they can get to that kind of break for the World Cup. And then obviously Urs Fischer can just kind of go back to the drawing board and rebuild that team over the what will end up being a preseason. But even if they do kind of go on and lose the next two or three games, it's still incredible what they've managed to achieve already this season, you know. And even if they do fall 6 or 7 points behind Bayern, it's not the end of the world for them by any means. So yeah, we'll just have to kind of wait and see, I suppose, won't we?
Yeah, it's interesting that we only really have 2 games left, right? We have the Tuesday, Wednesday fixtures, and we're going to rush through a preview at the end of this show, because usually you would get like a full preview show. Sorry, but we're not going to be able to do the full preview for this midweek fixtures. But we are going to give you some predictions. But then you have the Friday, Saturday, Sunday fixtures, and then that's it for 3.5 months, which is just bonkers. A lot of these guys will go to the World Cup, right? But for the Bundesliga, that's a long period where they're going to be on a long break. And it's going to be really interesting how teams will handle the next two fixtures, I think, as well. Union Berlin, of course, not impacted by that. But a lot of teams are sending players to the World Cup. And I think there's been some rumor that Tite, the Brazilian head coach, asked his players to fake injuries now so that they will be fit for the World Cup. And you hear stories like that. So you actually wonder, like, how many of these guys are now have the World Cup in the back of their head and saying, okay, we only have to get through 2 more fixtures healthy, right? I mean, Canada had that huge scare with Alfonso Davies, wondering if he would be fit. How many players have that in the back of their head? And Union Berlin don't really have that. So they can basically just say, like, look, guys, let's give everything for 2 games and then heal up for 3.5 months and come back to it and see how it goes when everything returns in February. Just, that's crazy, Stefan. What are we going to do the next 3.5 months?
Well, I'll be fishing out my Queen's Park season ticket and thankfully heading down to Glasgow to watch some games for the first time in probably 5 or 6 years. Because you're right, it is. It's 3.5 months off for a lot of these players. It's 3.5 months off for domestic football. And unless you're glued to your TV day and night for the World Cup, it's going to be a huge break. And even after the World Cup, there's still going to be a huge break after that. So it's going to be really interesting. But there's one player in particular, I think, who's maybe a good segue to kind of move on to the next topic that Hansi Flick will be hoping doesn't pick up an injury in the next couple of games.
Yeah, Youssoufa Moukoko, right? With everything that's going on, and we have this debate offline all the time, well, online, but off the show, about Niklas Füllkrug and whether he's going. And I think we both agree that he is probably an option as well, but he's not going to start for this team, right? He's the sort of guy that you last hope kind of guy. Moukoko, though, he's probably now a realistic option to be actually a player that could start. Not saying it is going to happen. I think that Flick might stick Kai Havertz up there to try play him in what is essentially the Choupo-Moting role now, right? Because he's going to be surrounded by an army of Bayern Munich attackers. And I think the thing that Flick will go for is trying to replicate whatever Bayern Munich are doing in attack, because it worked so well in the Champions League. I think now you're looking at Moukoko, who is incidentally turning 18 the day the World Cup starts, and you think he is going to Qatar. I mean, he had another great game on the weekend, scoring again. Mm. He's, a lot of you would think that the contract stuff would be bothering him. It's not. And in fact, everything now indicates that the day he's flying to Qatar, he'll probably have put pen to paper to a new contract. And with the maturity level he's shown, I mean, would you be worried him playing for Germany at the World Cup? I would go so far and say maybe it's time.
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of what everything's kind of leading up to at this point. You know, I wrote a newsletter on him this week, and within that, I kind of go into a lot more detail as to why he's doing so well this season, particularly up against this Dortmund side, which I can go into a little detail on. But the thing that really stood out to me is that, you know, he's so quickly gone from being this kind of shy youngster who we weren't quite sure if he was ready to play senior football, whether he was strong enough, whether he was big enough, to turn it into this absolute kind of, you know, fantastic player up front. I mean, that game at the weekend against Bochum was probably a really good example of just how mature he is now, in the sense that opening goal he scores, in the 8th minute when he basically pushes a defender off him, shoulder barges the guy to the ground, turn rounds, and fires this absolute rocket into the back of the net. And then just before halftime, he gets on the end of a counterattack and just kind of casually, you know, lobs the ball over the goalkeeper. Those were the kind of goals that you'd expect like a Robert Lewandowski or, you know, an Erling Haaland or someone to score, who obviously have a lot more experience, not just in terms of scoring goals and showing that they can score goals, but being the kind of focal point up front. And I just think he's having such a remarkable moment at the moment. Obviously, primarily for Dortmund, because obviously the unfortunate nature of Sebastian Haller having to bow out this season, Anthony Modeste not working. And for Moukoko to come into this team, and I think he's sitting on 8 goals and 4 assists in 12 games, if I'm not mistaken. 6 goals and 4 assists. It's really quite remarkable. And actually, his goal scoring record is even more remarkable when you kind of break it down, because as things stand in the Bundesliga, I think there's 5 players above him with a higher goals per 90, but only 2 of them play regularly. That's obviously Choupo-Moting at Bayern, who, you know, as we all know, is having quite a moment himself. And then there's, you know, Marcus Ingvarsten at Mainz, who's got just a bit slightly higher goals per 90 than him. But so we're talking about a player here who has a higher goals per 90 than Christopher Nkunku, a higher goals per 90 than Jamal Musiala. And I think what also makes it so interesting is that he's playing up front for a Dortmund team that aren't actually very good at scoring goals. You know, we always just assume that Dortmund are like these kind of like cavalier, gung-ho attacking sides that, okay, yeah, they're a little careless in defence and they struggle to hold on to leads and, you know, they can concede silly goals, but actually this Dortmund side are quite poor in attack. You know, their attacking stats, I think they're maybe only like fifth or sixth for goals scored, something similar for their XG as well. So he's not sitting up front in a Dortmund side that's battering sides every week. He's actually feeding off scraps, and he's still scoring goals for them. So that makes me think that actually he would be quite good up front for Germany. Whether he does or not, I'm not so sure. I think we're probably still more likely to see Flick to turn to someone like Serge Gnabry to at least start that kind of role up front, and that kind of false nine, or maybe Kai Havertz, and then someone like Moukoko can come off the bench perhaps. But I think what we're seeing right now for him at Dortmund is him showing that he's capable of being the senior number nine who can lead the line for, you know, what, the second biggest team in Germany right now. So all the signs are there to suggest that he's saying to Flick, look, pick me, I'm ready to play.
Yeah, I think that I find it really interesting with the Moukoko thing is too, like, because you know that I'm always like a glass half full guy, and hope I will secretly root for Germany to win this World Cup, obviously, but I'm also realistic enough to know that it is a long shot, and I also think that Flick is using this tournament primarily to get this team ready for the 2024 European Championships, which are obviously hosted by Germany. So I think it's quite intriguing to see Musiala and Moukoko together, because in 2 years' time, they will be in their early 20s, right? They're 19 and 20, or that's still very young. But you get what I mean. Like you can develop that chemistry now. And ideally, they will be the backbone of Germany's attack for a long time. So you can almost use this tournament almost as a staging ground and kind of see how you can fit those two pieces together. Obviously, still trying to win the World Cup, but also just giving kids like those two an opportunity to just start to gel together and also be integrated in a general Germany attack that is still quite young too, right? You're looking at Kai Havertz, Serge Gnabry, Leroy Sané, and all these guys. And I think the Flick might use this as an opportunity and say, well, he's ready now. We might as well give him the time to start getting ready for when it matters in the next 10 years or so.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, I guess it kind of comes down to how Flick looks at this World Cup, whether it's a kind of transition one or if it's a tournament that he really wants to win. Obviously, Moukoko, if he continues to play like the way he has done for Dortmund, then, you know, he's going to be a Germany star going forward. And especially when you consider the fact that there's not really any standout contenders to kind of compete with him in that number nine position. You know, we could spend the whole day talking about the benefits of playing someone like Kai Havertz up front. Yeah, of course, he kind of has that aerial threat. He's a smart player. He's probably a lot better than Chelsea are getting out of him, as we know, at Leverkusen. Serge Gnabry's played that role quite well in the past, but again, it's not really his initial, even though maybe that's where he wants to play, and maybe that's what he hammered home in his recent contract with Bayern Munich, that he wants to play there. He hasn't really blown anyone away with his performances at number nine. So you're right, it's another interesting aspect to it, that not only does Hansi Flick maybe want him because he needs him for this World Cup, but maybe he's also thinking, well, I need to embed this guy pretty quickly into my team because I don't really have any other alternatives going forward.
And to add to that, also make Cameroon go away. We could maybe snatch him up, right? Because he also has Cameroonian citizenship. So that will make them go away, because the moment he plays in the World Cup, he's cap-tied. And so that's an added benefit there as well. You silence any kind of possibility of any other country coming in, like they did for Choupo-Moting, and boy, would we need him now. So to basically essentially secure Moukoko. I think that's an interesting part of that discussion as well, that he is a dual citizen, and you do kind of want to make maybe sure that no one else can come in. Not that I think he's going to go and join another federation. I mean, he's quite embedded in the U21 already, which has been a great jumping off point for a lot of young German players. But I guess that would just make double sure. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I think I personally think he's going to be on the plane. The World Cup roster is going to be announced on Thursday at noon German time. I think there's 26 players. We know he's going to take four goalkeepers, right? Which means that Neuer, Trapp, Ter Stegen, and someone else is going, possibly Baumann. And then I think it's going to be interesting what he's going to do with all these additional spots that he has. One that just got freed up with Werner. So I think there's going to be at least one surprise on top of Moukoko. We'll see who that is.
Well, the way players are getting injured right now, there might be more than one surprise.
Yeah, that's true. Let's move on real quick to, I mentioned on the top of the show, but Frankfurt, again, looking really good on this match day. And we were talking about, and this is a story that kind of started breaking today. They have been so good in their recruitment, right? They won again this weekend. They're still in that very top, hanging out with Dortmund, Union, Freiburg, and Bayern Munich. And they signed another young, exciting player in Paxton Aaronson. Again, more on that in the newsletter. But Manga, their chef scout, who has been able to unearth all these guys like Kolum Muani and so on, and has, you know, he was also involved in a scandal where they hacked the RB Leipzig database for scouting. But he's apparently off to a Premier League team, Stefan. That's going to be interesting. Is this maybe Chelsea finally having found a sporting director?
Yeah, possibly. After ringing around every football club in the continent, it would seem. I don't know a huge amount about the story, to be honest. I saw it mentioned on the news today. I don't know a huge amount about him at Frankfurt, but I'll be really intrigued to see. You know, I saw some reports saying that he's basically leaving because he wants more control over things and maybe wants to play a more kind of a bigger role at another club, which I guess is understandable. I think it doesn't fall entirely, it's not entirely different, rather, from the Mislintat situation at Dortmund, I think, who obviously moved on from being a head scout there. Now, of course, that was more to do with him specifically falling out with people at Dortmund, but he obviously moved from there to a more, a larger role at Arsenal. I think he was still technically head of scouting, but he obviously played a bigger role there, and then obviously used that to move back to Stuttgart, where he's now more or less the de facto sporting director, or head of football operations, or whatever you want to call it. So the thing that made me, what it made me think about was a conversation I was actually having with a colleague about German football in general a few weeks ago. And we were talking about, just these big clubs around Germany and how so many of them underperform. And we were talking about Hamburg at one point, and, you know, my colleague was saying how, you know, yeah, we've got these same kind of board members and chief executives and things in charge. And I was kind of saying how common it seems to be in German football that the people running these clubs aren't actually usually that good at actually doing their jobs. And he made a good point to me where he's like, yeah, you know, in a lot of other industries, it would have been found out, they would have been sacked because, you know, the shareholders wouldn't have accepted the quarterly results or something. And I think there's something maybe to that in terms of, you know, German football is obviously, I think it has a degree of stability in it that a lot of other leagues don't have, because obviously it's fan-owned, which in itself pulls away the necessity for result-driven, as the need for every club to be a result-driven business. So, you know, you have a lot of kind of chief executives and board members and chairmen who've been at these clubs for 10 or 15 years, and they just kind of, they just seem to just sit through the good times and the bad times without any real repercussions for what happens, you know? You know, you can talk about Hamburg in that situation, you can talk about Schalke, Werder Bremen, even Dortmund to a large extent, the way that they've just kind of just totally just plateaued over the last 5 or 6 years. These guys never seem to get much grief or pressure from fan groups to move on. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of examples of like ultras, you know, being quite vocal on the terraces, but it's not the same as other industries in that regard. And I do wonder if this Frankfurt story is an example of quite an ambitious scout maybe wanting to make step up the ladder at a club like Frankfurt, but he's aware of the fact that, you know, nobody's going to move on unless they retire.
Yeah, I think it's also, in this case, Markus Krösche, has come in, and his transfers have been working out quite well this year, right? Mm-hmm. He was behind the Götzig transfer, the Mbimba transfer, and one other guy that escapes me right now. And I think that there was an opportunity to go with Bobic to Hertha because the two of them work quite closely. And that didn't materialize at the time. And instead, Frankfurt signed this signed Mamba to another extension to 2026. I think this is just a case of, you know, the role was already filled, and then Frankfurt maybe not necessarily seeing the guy as someone who can step up to the sporting director role. But you're quite right. Like, you know, when you can't seek promotion within the company that you work, that's usually how people react, right? They go and look somewhere else. And if a Premier League team can come in and offer that promotion, I mean, why wouldn't you take that opportunity? I think the risk is that it could turn out like Mintzel Tat from Stuttgart, who then went into a bigger role, and it actually turns out that he was just one mechanism of a lot, like he was just one cog in the wheel in finding these talents that Dortmund found, and Dortmund actually ended up still identifying players quite well afterwards. It's an interesting question. I guess we won't find out until he does go somewhere else and, you know, joins another club. But yeah, Frankfurt, I think it's an interesting story overall. I just wanted to bring it up because I know we have a lot of American listeners, and they're probably curious about where Paxton is ending up and how he's got there. And I think by and large, Frankfurt have been very good at identifying talent, and I'm pretty sure that's going to continue even if Manga does leave the club. All right, shall we talk about the Champions League then, Stefan? The Champions League draw, which is...
I wasn't sure if you expected me to move on, to keep talking about that, or just let you move on to the next topic.
No, let's just move on to the next topic.
Okay.
The Champions League draw, and this is what I'm looking at the phone. I have to actually get it in front of me. Let's start with Frankfurt, because I actually think that is the most intriguing one of the bunch. Obviously, a lot of people say Bayern PSG, but come on, we had that game now a few times. But I think there is no better draw than Frankfurt against Napoli. These are the two teams with the hottest stadium atmospheres in their respective countries. There is the sense that both of them are emerging football clubs. Football clubs that have a history of being big clubs in the past, right? And sort of are now having this resurgence. Some exciting players on both teams. I think that a lot of European teams are watching at the moment, whether it's Kvaratskhelia from Napoli or a bunch of Frankfurt players like Kolumuani, Kamada, etc. This is a juicy tie, Stefan. And I think this is going to be, like, I think, and I know a lot of people said Napoli is going to be the favorites, but I think it's going to be closer than people think.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, I think Napoli showed in that group stage just what they're capable of, and I think they have some outstanding players. And unfortunately, the way of the European football now, they just kind of strike me as one of those teams that are obviously just kind of on the cusp of greatness before they get dismantled by bigger clubs. They kind of remind me of that Ajax team from a few years ago, who were just kind of all conquering.
Yeah.
And I do kind of fear for Frankfurt in this regard. I mean, they've obviously come up against some very good teams, you know, not only in this Champions League group, but also last season in the Europa League. And they've shown that they can kind of go toe-to-toe with some very good sides. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see what Napoli looks like in 4 months' time, you know, because they have so many players who could very easily move on in January, particularly those forward players, who actually I don't think are going to the World Cup, most of them. So they could end up being real. They could end up going for a real premium in the January transfer window. So we'll kind of have to wait and see. But I don't think Frankfurt will be entirely bemused by this tie, just because they obviously knew they were going to have to come up against someone pretty solid. They're obviously at this point in the competition where they're the underdogs, no matter who they play. And I think it could have been a lot worse, to be perfectly honest with you. As good as Napoli are, they're not Manchester City. They're not, you know, a Real Madrid or PSG or Bayern Munich or whatever else. they do have faults and they are capable of being beaten. So, yeah, I think Frankfurt will probably quite, I think they'll probably relish this opportunity, even if they do end up struggling to win it.
Yeah, I think for them, this is almost like a bonus game anyways, right? I think every round in the Champions League from here on forward is a bonus round,
yeah,
which makes them pretty dangerous, I think. Leipzig against City. Now, that is a bonus round. you would think that City probably goes through here, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's maybe making me think that Leipzig could put up a big fight is the way that, you know, obviously Marco Rosa's got this team playing really, really well. They seem to be getting better every week. Mm. And they'll obviously have a huge amount of time off during the during the break to continue working on things. And unless Guardiola and Nkunku move on in January, then you'd assume Leipzig will be in better shape in the second half of the season. Not to mention the fact that they've obviously managed to beat Real Madrid recently as well. So they quite literally beat the European champion. So there's no reason why they can't maybe go one step further, or maybe not even one step further, actually, do something technically lower than that in beating English champions. But having said all that, I still feel like Man City are actually probably the team to beat in the Champions League this season. I know Bayern are up there as well. They've done very well, but I still kind of feel like Man City are the kind of automatic favourites for the tournament just because of the amount of money they've spent, the amount of depth they have in that squad. And the players they have. So, yeah, I wouldn't be holding out much hope for Leipzig in this tie, which, you know, again, that's absolutely fine. I think they're probably just quite delighted they managed to get out of their group, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think this is... I think they're going to try to win it, don't get me wrong.
Hmm.
But obviously, they're also going to focus on a lot of other things, and I think this is a little bit of a bonus round for them. Next, Dortmund against Chelsea. It's so hard to tell what Chelsea will look like when this comes around next time. Like, how many players will sporting director and owner Boehly have bought by the time Dortmund meet Chelsea finally? I guess the headline here is that it's Kai Havertz returns to Germany. Aubameyang returns to his old club. Pulisic as well, right? Mm. If he's still there when this comes around. I mean, this is I think also a big question mark for Chelsea. Is Pulisic still a Chelsea player when he meets Dortmund? Or gasp, maybe he's a Dortmund player because we've seen so many comebacks at Borussia Dortmund. don't radio this, by the way. This is just me talking nonsense. But this is an interesting matchup, and I think this could easily go either way.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if this was being played tomorrow or next week, I think Dortmund would really fancy their chances, to be honest. Chelsea look like... Not only do they look like they're in a real tricky transition under a new head coach, but they also look like they have a squad that needs a huge amount of investment. You know, you kind of made a quip about Boehly, obviously, spending money in January, but I actually think that'll probably be necessary just from the fact that that team just doesn't seem to be working that well. It's kind of weird to think, like, the kind of annoying thing, not the annoying thing, but the kind of weird thing about football is that, you know, a football club can sack a head coach and say, you're not doing well enough, we need to bring someone in to replace you. And then maybe a month or two into that new head coach being in the job, they'll quite openly talk about how the squad isn't good enough and how they have to sign new players, which then, you know, if you read between the lines, it's then basically admitting that they probably shouldn't have sacked the head coach in the first place, and maybe they should have just held on to him and brought in some new players. But I think Graham Potter's a decent head coach. I think he'll probably have Chelsea playing well by the time they play Dortmund. So I think that kind of time scale probably plays against Dortmund to a large extent. But, you know, you could maybe make the exact same argument for Dortmund in that regard. They're nowhere near as good as they probably should be. They're still missing key players. Maybe by this point, Gio Reyna's really kind of got into the swing of things. He's doing very well, you know. And, you know, we talked about Moukoko at the top of the show. Maybe he continues to go from strength to strength after a good World Cup with Germany. Mm. So I think these two teams could look very different from how they are now. So I completely agree with you. This one's up in the air. I think just on paper, Chelsea obviously have a better squad because they've spent a lot more money on it. But
yeah,
it's one that can change very quickly between now and when the fixtures get played.
Yeah, super interesting. I think the final game, I know you, this is where I'm totally the most optimistic, and bear with me here. I think that there is going to be a lot of post World Cup problems at PSG, and I think Bayern is going to benefit from that. But also, there's a huge difference to the last time they met. That this time Bayern won't be dependent on Robert Lewandowski anymore. Because the entire setup of that team is very different. They're very much built for Champions League football, aren't they? And I think that it's going to be... I mean, I posted... We have this chat on the Substack, right? We're going to read some comments later, but I posted this popcorn emoji because I think there's going to be a huge World Cup hangover for either Neymar or Messi. I think a lot of people think that either one of those two will win the World Cup. Mm. Messi is with one and a half legs at MLS. He's going to join Inter Miami in the summer, right? Neymar is so hot and cold. And then Kylian Mbappe, like, do we even know if he's still at PSG when this game comes around? I mean, he certainly doesn't want to be there anymore. Or sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. So I think Bayern are probably looking at this and they're like, this is an exciting game for us, a big European name coming to the Allianz Arena. We can sell this as a clash of giants. And internally also thinking, it's like, we can beat these guys. I think this is probably how Bayern looks at this. They're probably quite smitten about this.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure I share your optimism in this regard because... You know, we can talk about whether Mbappe wants to be at the club and whether Neymar or Messi will be tired after the World Cup, but we have to bear in mind that the other team are currently relying on, 36-year-old Choupo-Moting to lead the line for them, and they don't and they don't seem to have a plan if he's not in the squad. Now, you know, I don't want to dunk on Choupo-Moting right now because he's in great form for Bayern Munich and he's certainly doing the job that's been asked of him. So you can't really argue with that. But as I've said on recent podcasts, it's all very well and good that Nagelsmann's been able to slot Choupo-Moting into that team to kind of get them over the line over these last couple of weeks. But when the latter stages of the Champions League come around, if Bayern are lining up with Choupo-Moting up front, then PSG of all clubs will probably be thinking, right, well, we know how to handle this guy because he played for us and we know exactly what he's capable of and what he isn't capable of. So
yeah.
I don't know. I just kind of feel like I think Bayern probably have to, and I think Nagelsmann probably will do this. I think he'll probably go back to the drawing board during this break and try and figure out a more sustainable long-term solution to that attacking lineup because the team that he built at the start of the season, the team that were scoring a great number of goals and had Sadio Mane in it, and you know we saw them kind of dismantle Inter Milan and Barcelona. And I remember talking about it at the time, saying, you know, while this kind of dynamic front line may struggle in the Bundesliga against teams that defend very deep, they might actually do very well against bigger clubs. So maybe you know by this point, Sadio Mane is really locked in; he's clicking into gear, and that kind of dynamic strikeless formation is what we see against PSG and it works very well. But I still feel like PSG are capable of really knocking any team out of this tournament, to be honest with you, just because of the sheer amount of quality they have. And I also kind of fear for Bayern in the sense that they're now up against a PSG side that are well aware of what Bayern have done to them in the past. You know, and they'll be kind of out gunning to try and make up for that in the past, obviously. You know, what happened in Lisbon. And I just feel like that could play against Bayern as well, in the sense that they're going to be up against a PSG side that will be anything but complacent. So I think it's going to be a tough game. By no means am I saying that, you know, PSG are going to knock out Bayern Munich. I think it's going to be a proper outstanding two legs of, you know, two teams going toe-to-toe with one another. And I think it's going to really hang in the balance, to be honest with you.
And two teams that can't afford to go out at this stage. I think that's also, that adds quite a lot to this because Bayern and PSG cannot go out in the round of 16. Mm. The pressure internally will be massive if either one of these clubs go out. And yeah, I think that is something that really, really interesting.
Yeah, that's actually maybe a good segue to talk about the subscriber comments on this, because NK said he talked about the other games at first. He said, should be good games, little concerned about the fact a scenario exists and isn't crazy where all Bundesliga good teams are eliminated. Assuming no massive injuries during World Cup, would have to think Dortmund and Bayern are probably two most likely to advance, Leipzig least likely, and haven't watched any Napoli, so don't know about Frankfurt. But then he says, also, if Bayern lose, dreading all the fire Julian Nagelsmann posts on social media and everything, which is a good point, you know, because if they do get knocked out of the last 16, it will be a repeat of last year, albeit against a much better team. But that's kind of why Nagelsmann was hired to a large extent. But let me just kind of run through some more of these comments. We can kind of wrap up this section maybe, but Jason Cunnington says, I still think Bayern can go all the way this year, especially now they've started using number 9. So he disagrees with me entirely. He thinks Choupo-Moting is going to win them the Champions League. Fair play. Robert Carvantes says, long way from February, but in current form, got to say Dortmund over Chelsea. Poor Leipzig are not getting past Haaland and KDB, obviously Kevin De Bruyne. UEFA insists on this Bayern-PSG matchup like it was some magical rivalry created in Lisbon. It's a good point. Michael Schaefer says Bayern and Dortmund have a fair chance of advancing. No, I could see either tripping up. I'd be a little surprised if Leipzig or Frankfurt get past a round of 16. Some moron called Mano Vate says long time until February, of course, but Bayern should be fine. Don't know if I agree with that. Greg Weiserman says, I agree with Manu. Great draw for Bayern, Dortmund and Frankfurt. We all know PSG's big three after World Cup will not be together a lot after World Cup. Chelsea is a straight disaster, and I have a feeling Napoli who have been great, will lose some players over the winter. Also, will the scout Frankfurt lose? Oh, yes, that's a question about the scout leaving Frankfurt, which we covered. Matthew Starr says, I think it's the last point. Not as down on Leipzig against Man City, though still unlikely they will progress. They played them decently in the group stages last year while they were still struggling in the Bundesliga. Bayern versus PSG feels very much like a toss-up, post-World Cup, health and hangover dependent. I imagine Chelsea will bolster their squad over the winter, so maybe a different team by the time Dortmund face them, but I would think Dortmund advance. Frankfurt-Napoli should be an absolute blast if Napoli hold on to a team and remain on form. Would expect Napoli to progress. And for anyone wondering why I've just read out all those comments, those are, of course, from our paying subscribers who can now get in touch with us on a near enough daily basis in the chat function on the Substack app. So if you're not subscribed up to the newsletter, do consider giving it a go, because not only do you get our newsletters and ad-free versions of the podcast, but you can now have a chat with us day-to-day whenever we post topics in the chat. So yeah, and those guys have done, and that's why we've read out their comments on the podcast.
And it's more and more people doing it, and we really appreciate it. Plus, it's also a lot more fun on Twitter, where people just yell at each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it might become more and more relevant now that the more Donald Trump, the more Elon Musk gets his hands on Twitter.
No, that's a Freudian slip.
Yeah, anyhow, I think it was.
anyhow, as I said, usually we would have a preview show for the English, like for the Bundesliga match day that's upcoming. But because we have an English Woche midweek, we're just going to rush through these predictions real quick. We do these predictions in association with Get German Football News. So please give them a follow, check them out as well. They're kind enough to always post our predictions and keep count on who's leading. So, Stefan, let's do this real quick. Start with Wolfsburg against Dortmund. My prediction is 2-1 Dortmund. How about you?
2-2, Will. 2-2 between them.
Okay. Bayern against Werder. I went for 3-0 win for Bayern. How about you?
I went for 3-1 win for Bayern.
Okay. Bochum against Gladbach. I went for 3-1 Gladbach.
I've gone for a 1-1 draw. I'm feeling a little low on Gladbach right now.
Fair enough. Stuttgart-Hertha, I went for a 2-2 draw here.
I've gone for a 2-0 win for Hertha, who I think have improved recently.
Ah, interesting. Köln-Leverkusen, and this is the match of the week, just has to be. And I actually think Leverkusen are going to continue their positive trend and they're going to win this game 3-0.
I've also gone for a Leverkusen win because I think Cologne are quite rubbish right now. So yeah, I've gone for a 2-1 win for Leverkusen.
Leipzig against Freiburg, the repeat of the German Cup final. And I went for a 3-1 Leipzig win, not Leverkusen, not Freiburg. 3-1 Leipzig win.
Interesting. Yeah, I've gone for a Leverkusen win too. I think it's going to be really tight though. So I've gone for 2-1 win.
Leipzig, you mean, right?
Sorry, apologies. Bloody hell, yeah, you've got me confused. 2-1 to Leipzig against Freiburg. Yes, I think Leipzig will win.
Okay, we both got a win here for Leipzig. Leipzig, not Leverkusen or Freiburg. Leipzig. Union against Augsburg. And I think actually Union are going to rebound here and they're going to win this game 2-1.
Yeah, I've gone for something similar. I've gone for a very narrow 1-0 win because I still think Augsburg are a decent side. And I think Union are struggling a wee bit right now. I feel like they're a little out of gas. So yeah, 1-0 to Union.
Frankfurt against Hoffenheim. I think the Eagles going to keep soaring. 2-0 for Frankfurt.
Yeah, I feel similarly. I've gone for a 3-1 win for Frankfurt.
And finally, Schalke against Mainz. Mainz are going to win this narrowly 1-0.
I think this game is going to be absolutely dreadful. And I implore any Bundesliga fan to not watch it. Which usually means it's going to be a 5-4 barnstormer. But yeah, I've gone for a 0-0 draw.
Awesome. There we go. That's your predictions. We're going to obviously also pick a match of the week. What's your match of the week? Real quick.
I will go for Leipzig versus Freiburg because Leipzig, I think, could maybe overtake them in the table. I've totally just pulled out the top of my head. So, no still
Freiburg
some way off.
Second.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
There's still somewhere off.
Well, they'd close the gap to 2 points, I think. Yeah, 2 points, which would be really interesting.
It's very tight. Very tight at the top. I think Köln against Leverkusen, the Rhein Derby, is a must watch. But you're going to get more on those over at Get German Football News, the predictions. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Stefan, we'll be back midweek. I assume probably somewhere in between the match day 14, I think it is. And then finally, we are going to have the preview show for the final match day before the World Cup. So the last time of a tight schedule on Gegenpressing. After that is World Cup, and I guess we'll figure out the scheduling for that tournament and more stuff. So as always, the show is brought to you by Bet Online, and this podcast is also in association with Get German Football News. And anything else you want to add before we wrap this up?
No, not really. Just a big thank you to everyone who continues to support us, either through Substack or YouTube or even just on Twitter. We always appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a ton. And we'll be back later this week. Until then, auf Wiedersehen. In Sicht.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.